Sean, it's Thursday afternoon, and in a few hours, we're going to be together at Madison Square Garden for Game 5, Rangers-Panthers, and the Matt Rempe Show. Are you ready, Sean? Are you ready for the Rempire?
I'm ready. I can smell what Matt Rempe's cooking. I'll tell you that. Look.
You're not ready.
It's the greatest thing that's ever happened in hockey. Look, Matt Rempe's a great story. Matt Rempe's getting caved in this series. Everybody on
so the Rangers.
Everybody on the Rangers is getting caved in on this series, but so is Matt Rempe, right? And all this whole narrative that he's the answer, like I don't get it. Nothing against Matt Rempe; he's a fine player, and good for him enjoying his 5 minutes of fame that maybe becomes 5 years of fame. Who knows? But he's not the reason they win. And he's not the reason they lose. He's kind of inconsequential in the whole thing. And when everybody says, do you know what their record is when Matt Rempe plays? It's the same record as when Gustafsson plays. And if you had a better defenseman than Gustafsson, you'd play him, regardless of what the record is. So I don't want to hear what the record is with Matt Rempe. He plays 6 minutes. You know how many players in the league have played less minutes than Matt Rempe in these playoffs?
You know the answer.
One. It's Nils Lundqvist in Dallas, who's their sixth defenseman, who they don't trust to put on the ice, and who they're in trouble with now because if Tanev is hurt after being injured in game 4, I don't know what they're going to do to field six healthy defensemen when they already don't play their number 6. But he is the only player. Like, why are we not celebrating Steve Lorenz?
All right.
That's my question. Are you ready, Dan? Are you ready for the Steve Lorenz show at Madison Square Garden tonight?
All right. Sean, on record as not liking Matt Rempe. No, I'm just kidding. Listen, it's a fun story. He's a fun guy. The energy in the building is great. No way is he the reason that they win or lose. I'll give you a guarantee tonight. Well, I'll give you two guarantees as we're just a few hours actually now away from Game 5. And by the way, we're going to talk all about the other series, the Western Conference Final, the Edmonton Oilers and Dallas Stars tied 2-2, going into their Game 5 in Dallas on Friday. We have Derek Van Deest, our writer out in Edmonton. He's covering the heck out of that series. He's going to be joining us shortly. But no, Sean, I'll give you two guarantees for Madison Square Garden. One, the energy will be high when Matt Rempe gets on the ice and the fans will chant. Two, Igor Shesterkin will be good. Very good. Those are the two guarantees. Beyond that, I couldn't tell you. But Igor Shesterkin, Sean, forget about Matt Rempe. Igor Shesterkin is putting on a show in these Stanley Cup playoffs and in this series in particular. The guy gave up 4 goals in Game 3, and yes, the Rangers won it. He was by far and away their best player, and he gave up 4 goals in Game 3. Gave up 3 goals in Game 4, and they lost it, and it wasn't even close of who their best player was. It was Igor Shesterkin. Under siege all the time, especially in games 3 and 4, and making save after save, point-blank chance after point-blank chance. Listen, we know without a good goaltender, you're not going anywhere. But this guy looks like the best goalies in history in their prime. Grant Fuhr, Dominic Hasek, Marty Brodeur, you name it. This is the way he's playing right now. So that's the guarantee I'll give you, is that he's going to be really good. Can the Rangers catch up to their goalie?
Well, that is the big question, right? And he has been really good. He's playing to a .925 save percentage. Jeremy Swayman played to a .933. He's on the golf course.
Right.
Because his team couldn't catch up. So I don't even know if Igor is the best goalie in these playoffs, right? I thought Swayman was unbelievable, and he cracked once, and that was all Florida needed. And I think that's all Florida needs in this round is one crack, and they've been working at it. They've been peppering him with shots, with shot opportunities. Like everybody says, oh, the chances don't matter. It's only shots on goal. You've never played goal if you think that. When you have to react to 104 shots in a game, you're working. I don't care how many of them actually reach you. It's some of the ones that don't reach you that are actually harder, right? And the high danger chances and everything else that are blocked. You're still doing all that work to make that save. So he's being tested. Look, Sergei Bobrovsky's actually played, I want to say, 35 minutes more than Shesterkin because of overtimes and whatever else and the odd way that the series break. He's faced 100 less shots.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah, in the playoffs, that's crazy. So he's overworked, and I think that the Panthers the way they're built is to go deep into series, not only to wear players down, but to wear goalies down.
They are, and he's got a 931 through four games in this series, and he's faced over well over 30 shots per game. And like you said, I mean, the attempts are through the roof in favor of the Florida Panthers. So listen, I mean, we'll see. We'll see where this goes. Game five tonight. We're recording this Thursday. It's at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers have been good at Madison Square Garden against the Panthers. Well, let me say this. They were good in game two against the Panthers. They were not good in game one, but they didn't get blown out in terms of the shot attempts and the shots on goal the way they did in Florida. It's a huge one. I think more of a must win for the Rangers than it is for the Panthers. In that sense, we'll see how it goes. Like I said, we talked to Derek Van Deest, our writer out in Edmonton, who's covering the series, the Oilers and the Stars. And that one's 2-2 as well, Sean. And I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised that it is, just based off of how game four started. And we'll get into this a little bit with Derek, but I just wanted to throw this out there. Like, it's 2-0 early, 5.5 minutes into game four. Dallas is up 2-0. They score on their first shot, and I'm looking at it. I'm going, well, this is it, right? This is the end of the Oilers right here, right now. They're going to lose game four at home, and they're going to lose this series in five in Dallas, and that's it because they don't have it. They showed me a lot. They've showed me a lot at a lot of, you know, at various different points in the playoffs, but the way they were able to not only just come back in that game, but stymie the Stars, just stop things from happening for the Dallas Stars, was really impressive. A very showcase type of win, I think, for the Oilers and who they've become. It's not so much of who they were anymore. I think it's who they are now is the type of win that they got there. And I still don't think they win the series because you know what their problem is? When they get up in games, they have a trouble holding leads, but they were able to chase and really play a strong game four after the first 5.5 minutes.
Yeah, these aren't your older brothers, Oilers, right? They're not the team that runs and guns and doesn't really care about defense and wants to win 6-5. I think part of it is their goaltending, right? Stuart Skinner hasn't been good. He gave up 2 goals on the first 4 shots. And Dallas only had 20 more shots in the game. And a lot of those came in the second half, when they were really chasing the game. When it was 2-0 and Edmonton was chasing the game, Dallas wasn't really doing anything. And it was, to me, it almost seems like Edmonton, who play a far better defense under Chris Knobloch than they ever have in the last few years, were afraid to let pucks get to their goaltender. It was the same thing that happened to Carolina in the New York Rangers series. At some point, they just became afraid of letting the puck get to their goaltender, and so they did everything they could to suppress offensive opportunities, and that's what Edmonton did for a long time. And so a lot of those 20 shots came later in the game after Edmonton had taken the lead, and Dallas felt like they had to chase. But they had Edmonton on the ropes like a heavyweight fighter, and all they needed was one more punch. I mean, at one point in that game, they interviewed Pete DeBoer, and he said the next goal is huge. And like a minute later, Edmonton got it. And it was huge because it put them back in the game. And it gave them life and it gave them their legs back. I almost felt like if they got 10 more shots, they were going to score 2 more goals. And it was going to be 4-0 and they couldn't generate anything.
Eddie Olczyk said that on the broadcast too, on the TNT broadcast after it was 2-0. He said the next one's huge. And if you know, kind of hinting that if it's Dallas's, not only is that going to be the end of game four, but it could be the end of the Oilers in the series, which I thought as well, but it went the other way. Eddie Olczyk, by the way, on the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard this week, so check that out. But I mentioned, Sean, we talked to Derek Van Deest, our writer out in Edmonton. So let's get to that. I mean, he's covering the heck out of this series. He knows everything that's going on with it. So here's our interview with our colleague, Derek Van Deest. Derek, thanks so much for jumping on with us. I know you got a flight to catch. Listen, I was catching up on all the coverage from Game 4 last night. We're recording this, obviously, Thursday. And one of the things that stuck out to me was what you wrote. It was the lineup changes that Chris Knobloch's made. But more than that, it's this guy's just got a touch, right? I mean, he just kind of has a feel and a touch. It's like everything he's done, well, not everything, but a lot of what he's done with the lineup and those types of decisions since he got there in Edmonton, right? Continue to just work out.
Yeah, he's made some big calls since he's gotten here. And, you know, with regards to lineups and things like that. And you look at earlier in the playoffs when he went away from Stuart Skinner, when he brought in Calvin Pickard, a lot of people said, hey, you know, I don't know if that's such a great idea. Calvin Pickard has never played a playoff game. Like, is this going to work out for you? And it worked out. Calvin Pickard went, played two really solid games. And everyone thought, okay, they're going to stick with Calvin Pickard. They're going to ride him. And he went back to Stuart Skinner. And people said, well, I don't know if that's such a good idea. Stuart Skinner's not playing very well. Why are you going back to him? And he went back to him. And it worked out well. And so it was the same thing going into game four. The owners didn't play really poorly in game three. I thought they played really well in game three. They played a bad 10 minutes. And then they got a bad bounce in the third, and then they just couldn't win the game. So we didn't think making wholesale changes was necessary. You needed to tweak a guy here or there. But he went and made three changes. And it's funny because we asked Pete DeBoer, who's been around forever, when's the last time you made three healthy changes in your lineup and took out three guys from the press box and put them in? And he couldn't remember ever doing that. And I can't remember a coach ever doing that with three players. Like, you come in with one player or two player, but I can't remember a coach coming in with three players. So we were really questioning that decision, which we have questioned his decisions in the past. But the way it worked out, the two guys he put in the lineup each collected their first point of the playoffs, and the owners probably played one of their most complete games of the playoffs. So everything this guy's touching right now is turning into gold, and it's quite amazing to see it. And since he got here, how everything seems to work out for him.
I mean, look, I don't think Corey Perry was a big stretch to put in, right? I mean, he's made for this, and he's made for the Dallas Stars.
Well, probably not, but the fact that he had sat out the last five games, like, we weren't sure what kind of reaction we were going to get from Corey Perry. And Corey Perry, a lot of people thought, well, this guy has played in multiple Game 7s. He's a winner. You need this guy for Game 7 in Vancouver, and they kept him out of the lineup. So it was kind of interesting. You figured Corey Perry would eventually get back in, but this series has been a very up-and-down, fast-skating series. Teams are getting up and down the ice, so you know, Corey Perry is getting up there in age. Could he be able to keep up? Is he able to get up and down the ice like he used to? But he was fine last night. He played really well. He's got all the intangibles, and he came out and he had a chip on his shoulder a little bit from sitting out for five games. You can tell he's a competitive guy. He was excited to get back in, but he wanted to make a difference in that game, and he did. And so it may not have been a stretch, but just the fact of the way the series was working out, the way the teams were, you know, it's a much different series than the first two with LA and Vancouver. LA and Vancouver were both big, heavy teams that the owners had to try and break the cycle and score on the cycle. This is a rush series. They're just going back and forth, creating chances. And so, I don't know if that kind of suits a guy like Corey Perry at this stage in his career, but he went in and fit in well last night.
You know, and I thought Knobloch was going to have to make another decision with Stuart Skinner about 5.5 minutes into the game, into game four. But he stuck with him, and Skinner ends up making 20 straight saves, and they win the game 5-2. I wonder if, Derek, since you're around him all the time, if you can just speak to the makeup of this guy, because he has been questioned left and right. I mean, heck, Sean and I are questioning him all the time, right? I mean, we're not alone in that. You look at the four goalies remaining, and you say to yourself, all right, there's three really good ones. And then there's Stuart Skinner, right?
Yeah.
But he's answered, and this team is two wins away from a Stanley Cup final as we speak right now. So what does it say about who Stuart Skinner is?
Yeah, and he's got a great makeup, and like he's a great guy. He's really, I think that the thing that he really takes pride in is that he doesn't let things linger. He doesn't let things bother him. He's such a laid back guy. And so I think, you know, this is a guy that talks on game day. Like, how many goalies talk on game days nowadays? He was on the podium on the day of the game. Like, we've gone into dressing rooms where you have media people standing in front of your goalie. You're not even allowed to say hi to him for much less talk to him and interview him and get him on the podium. So he's a real laid back guy, but he's a guy that's kind of going to get better and better and better. You sometimes you forget he's only in his second year. This is only his second full year. He got thrown into the deep end last year. He was supposed to be Jack Campbell's backup. And then suddenly Jack Campbell couldn't stop the puck, so he had to be the guy, and he was the guy all the way here. And this year was supposed to work the same way. It was because we won A, 1B with Jack Campbell. They realized early on it's not going to happen with Jack Campbell. They sent him down to the minors, and they said, here's the ball, Stuart. It's yours to run with. And I just think that his makeup, he's a good goaltender. Like, we've seen him. He's good positionally. He's a good goaltender. But he just hasn't earned that respect of elite goaltenders yet, like the ones that are in the Final Four right now. And to be honest with you, right now there was some concern when he let in two goals on, you know, he let in the first shot of the game, I think, for the 10th time this season. So, you know, he's able to recover, but to be honest, I think he's outplaying Ottinger. Ottinger's playing well, but you look at the other, no one's talking about Jake Ottinger. He let in 4 goals last night. You know, and no one's saying, oh, well, Dallas has a goaltending issue. Like right now, Stuart Skinner, when he can lock it in, he can lock it in. And he did that in game 6 against Vancouver. He did that in game 7 against Vancouver. And for the most part, he's playing well. He's just got to get rid of those 1 or 2 bad goals that he lets in every series. And I think once he gets those out of his way, I think he can, the Oilers have a ton of confidence in him. And I think he'll play well the rest of the way.
Stuart Skinner, this series is going to be won on the backs of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. That's just who they are. That's what they've earned. That's their legacy now. It doesn't matter that they're 1-2 in scoring in the NHL for the playoffs. It doesn't matter how brilliant they've been at times. If they don't get this team over the hump, they're going to be the two that are that were blamed. Well, I'm curious what you think of Connor McDavid specifically in the last few days as he's kind of gone about his business here.
I think it's funny because I think Connor McDavid, obviously he's the best player in the world. Leon Draisaitl is probably the second best player in the world. But I think early on when I saw in the playoffs, when in 2017 and then the last 5 years, he tried to take too much on to himself. Like he was the guy, and you see this a lot with young players. I remember Ovechkin was kind of like this. Like he would take the puck and say, I got to go all the way up the ice. I got to beat 4 guys to score a goal. And I think you're seeing a maturation of Connor McDavid where he's using his teammates more. He's trusting his teammates more. He's not every shot he has to take. Like he's a guy that believes in his teammates, and he's surrounded by a better cast than he maybe had in the past. The same with Leon Draisaitl. Like playoffs aren't necessarily won by star players. Star players will get you there, but it's the real role players, the guys that you don't expect to step up and make plays. You didn't expect Janmark and Connor Brown to get that shorthanded goal. You didn't expect Ryan McLeod and Corey Perry to start things off for the Oilers. But I think he is using his teammates a lot better. He is trusting them a lot more. And I think it's a maturation process. But when he does need to turn it on, he'll turn it on. And I know that a lot of people were saying that something seemed to be affecting him early on. He didn't have that acceleration, that breakaway speed, whether he was sick or something was bothering him. But he's back to the old Connor McDavid because he's been flying in these last 2 games of the series, which is big trouble for the Stars.
You know what impressed me was how quickly he came to the defense of Darnell Nurse. When the question was asked about Darnell Nurse, I think it was Skinner at the podium with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And McDavid said, I'll take that. And it was a quick defense. Now, you know, that's leadership. Is the criticism of Nurse warranted?
I think so. Even last night, he had a pretty good game last night, but last night he struggled. There was about three or four plays where he had an open pass down the wing and he missed the guy and there was icing and it came back. And it got to a point where like, my God, this guy can't make a pass. He has no confidence in his game whatsoever. And the thing is, when Darnell Nurse is confident playing well, he breaks up the cycles. He stops the attack at the point. He doesn't back into his goaltender. Like he's physical. He's strong. He gets up and down the ice. He will jump into the rush. But he hasn't been doing much of that. And he's minus 12 going into that game with 2 points. Like, you need more from a $10 million defenseman. Like, he's supposed to be your top guy, and he's not being the top guy right now. And yeah, he was, you know, obviously you guys saw that press conference. He was not happy. He was mad. He was mad at the criticism. He didn't like it. But the guys rallied around him. They knew he was struggling the same way they rallied around Stuart Skinner in the first round of the playoffs. They're like, Stuart's our guy. He's our guy. He may need to take a step back, but he's our guy. So you have this core leadership group, and Darnell Nurse is part of that, the guys that have come up, and they're really protective of each other, and they really kind of stand up for each other. Yeah, and Connor McDavid said, I will take that question because I'm going to stand up for Darnell Nurse. And admittedly, he's not playing his best hockey right now, but they're just trying to lift him up and pick him up. And I think last night was a step in that direction. And I think if he plays with a chip on his shoulder, he's probably a better player. He's got to be a physical player. He's got to stop the cycle. He's got to break up plays. And it just too often he's been caught standing in front of the net, not knowing who to pick up, and the goals go in. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Darnell Nurse because he makes so much money. But I think he is a talented defenseman, and he's just not playing at his capabilities right now.
Speaking of defensemen who you can't win without, how much does this series change if Chris Tanev isn't available for Game 5? We don't know what his status is. He missed the second half of Game 4, limped off after blocking a shot. What does that change in this series, do you think?
I think that's a huge loss for Dallas because I think he's the one of the few physical defensemen that they have. Like, the Dallas Stars have really good puck-moving defensemen, but they're not going to knock anybody off the puck. Tanev is tough in front of his net. He's going to knock people off the puck. He's going to make those big physical plays. And I think without him, that really puts so much pressure on Miro Heiskanen. Like, the guy's playing 30 minutes already. So now he's going to pile more on. He's playing with the against the McDavid line. He's playing against the Draisaitl line. He's penalty-killing, power play. He's doing everything. So you take a guy like Kristanov out of the lineup, a guy that plays 20, 25 minutes a night, you have to fill that spot with something. And that's who probably fills that spot, him and Esa Lindell. Suddenly they see their minutes rise. And they're spending a lot of time in the defensive end of the ice when they can't contribute on the offensive end of the ice. Usually a guy like Tanev would take care of stuff on the defensive end, allowing those two guys to get up and down the ice and contribute offensively. But if you're chasing McDavid and Draisaitl all night, you're not going to contribute offensively. So that's a huge hit, in my opinion, for the Dallas Stars, who really don't have a lot of physical guys in their lineup. It's been a really tame series in that regard. It's not like Florida and New York. The guys are running each other through the boards. These guys, it's almost like a high-level shinny game. These guys are going back and forth. No one's hitting each other. There's really no animosity. But if there was going to be some, it would be with Chris Tanev, because he knows these Oilers really well. He knows how to kind of try and defend McDavid and Draisaitl. But if he's out of the lineup, then you watch for the Oilers. They're going to ramp up the physicality because there's no one there to do anything about it.
I know he's hurt. I think there was a picture of him in the airport with a walking boot on. I'd still be surprised if he doesn't play Game 5. I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is, right? I mean, I don't know that he will be an effective Chris Tanev. And maybe even if he does play, maybe that's where, right, Derek, that's where the Oilers can still take advantage.
Yeah, and you know what? We were surprised he didn't come back. Like, we know Chris Tanev pretty well from his days in Calgary. And seriously, when he took that shot and limped off, everyone thought, oh, he'll be back. We've seen this before. But when he didn't come back, we're like, whoa, that must be serious for Chris Tanev not to come back. And, yeah, he'll do everything he can to kind of get back in that lineup. But will he be as effective? That's something that's going to be interesting to see, whether or not the Oilers try to exploit that. Because, you know, this is a guy that's a very good defensive defenseman, a very good player. But, you know, when you got to limp around out there, I don't know how effective you can be. So that could be a big loss for the Dallas Stars, who, in my opinion, looked really tired in the second half of that game. Like, some of those 30-year-old guys looked their age. Like, they just couldn't get anything generated. They looked a tired team. So if you're missing a guy like that, it's kind of in his prime and his wheelhouse, and now he's not there, then you're going to ask some more, you know, from guys like Suter and Pavelski and some of those older players that right now look a little tired.
One more on this series, last one on this series particular for me. I did want to, you know, Sean's right. I mean, this series is going to be one on the backs of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right? And Stuart Skinner, too. But, and it's maybe in a little defense of Darnell Nurse, he plays almost 2 minutes shorthanded per game. And their penalty kill is 23 of its last 23. It's perfect in this series, obviously.
Yep.
So it's almost maybe not a reversal of what we've seen, but the power play hasn't done anything yet. But the other team's power play hasn't done anything. And he got Matthias Janmark scoring a shorthanded goal. So how key has his penalty kill been?
It's been huge. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Florida Panthers are the only team that scored power play goal in the conference finals so far. I'm not sure if the Rangers got one either.
Rangers got one.
Do they have one? Okay.
Yeah.
So, but the penalty kill, they've really, what Chris Knobloch has done with the penalty kill, and I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Glenn Gullickson as well that works with that unit, is that he's taken the bottom six guys, and he said, you guys make this your contribution to our team. You guys play this penalty kill, and it's a very aggressive penalty kill. And I think if you don't have the big booming shot from the point as a weapon, which Vancouver doesn't have, Dallas didn't have, then they can be really aggressive going after guys with the puck. And they're quick and they have speed. So if you're trying to work the puck around the zone, you're going to have those guys chasing you all night. You can't really settle down. They don't play the tight little box. And they use three sets of forwards so those guys can stay fresh. They come out and they use it. They're not the two sets, it's three sets of forwards. And they have speed going back the other way. And the job Janmark is doing on the penalty kill has been really impressive. Connor Brown came in from the press box. He missed, I think it was six of the first seven games. He's come in and done an impressive job on the penalty kill. They got Adam Henrique out there on the penalty kill. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins does a great job on the penalty kill. And I think they can be aggressive if you don't have that big booming shot from the point. And I think that's the situation with with Vancouver because Quinn Hughes couldn't shoot the puck. There was something wrong with Quinn Hughes. He just couldn't shoot the puck, and he almost refused to shoot the puck. And you got Miro Heiskanen running the power play here. He doesn't have the big booming shot or something to fear from the blue line. So the Oilers can be really, really aggressive, and teams are just not able to set up in the zone. And I think that's part of the problem right now with teams, and that's why the Oilers' penalty kill has been so successful.
Look, Derek, we know we got a game five on Friday, and at least six, if not seven. Who do you think wins this series?
I called Edmonton in six all the way. I really believe that the Oilers have the upper talent. They have the better high-end talent, but I also believe that they have more guys in that prime of their career, in that window. And I think the Dallas Stars have a lot of good young players and a lot of good older players, but they don't have that meat in the window. And I think a series that goes longer, I think that double overtime game in game one really affected Dallas. And I always thought that was going to be a problem for Dallas because as the series goes along, those legs get heavier and heavier and heavier, and the Oilers seem to get stronger and stronger and stronger when series goes along. I think that obviously that game five is going to be a huge game, but I think the Oilers look at this as a massive opportunity that they didn't take advantage of last year in game five in Vegas, because they thought last year in game five in Vegas, they win that game in Vegas, they wrap up the series in six, they may go straight through the Stanley Cup final and win it all. So I think they're looking at that going, okay, we beat Dallas, we come back home and finish this off in six. They look like a tired team. They've dominated stretches of, like, when they play their best hockey, Dallas can't handle them. Like, you look at that first period the other night, the shots were 16-4. And then, like, they just can't handle what the Oilers keep coming at them. And so I think right now Dallas is going to have to find something. They're going to have to dig deep to win this game five. And I think the Oilers, you look how they turned it on after 10 minutes the other night. They said, there's no way we're going to lose this game. And they just came out flying, and Dallas had no answer for them.
All right, there it is, DVD, Edmonton in six. Man, I couldn't disagree more on that. But thank you very much, Derek. Go catch your flight. Great coverage. Continue to cover it. Continue to read them on NHL.com. Thank you, Derek.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Great stuff there with Derek Sean. He's covering the heck out of this series. We had Mike Zeisberger as well on it. Nick Kotsanika's done some stuff. Tracy Myers. We're all over it, as we're all over the Eastern Conference Final as well. So Game 5, Dallas-Edmonton, is going to be in Dallas on Friday. And I disagree with Derek. I don't think Dallas is cooked. I don't think they're tired. I don't agree with any of that. I think that they're going to be refreshed after a 2-2 series. I don't think they're surprised that they're in a 2-2 series. I don't think they're surprised they're in a grind here. And they've got a lot of veteran guys who know how to do it. And yeah, they've played a lot of hockey, but so have the Oilers.
They relish the grind. That's what they're built for, right? I don't see tired either. I see resignation, and not in a bad way, just in a, we expected this to go six or seven, and we're at six. We got to play six now, maybe seven if things go right or wrong. And that's okay. We have the better goalie. But the one place I do agree is if Chris Tanev is hurt, and you really have to wonder, because he didn't come back and he's come back from everything this year, how badly he's hurt. If he is not available, I mean, we talked a little bit about the fact in the opening that they don't have a sixth defenseman. And it's not like they're hiding somebody on their bench who they can all of a sudden be like, well, we'll just put this guy in. Like, they're already trying to hide their six. So how many minutes are you going to play your top four for? And one of whom is Ryan Suter, and who's getting up there. And, you know, I'm sure we'll give anything in what may be his last push to try and win a cup. But what are you going to ask of the four that you're already leaning on so heavily?
Yeah, no, the Tanev situation is a potential game changer in this series. So, he's the type of guy that I can see playing, you know, through an injury, even a significant one. But like we talked about in the interview with Derek, like, you know, how banged up is he? You know, how limited is he going to be? And if he's that limited, I mean, heck, if he's that limited, is it worth playing him in the first place? But I think you do it. You get the emotional lift. You get the energetic lift. And maybe you get a little bit of Tanev getting the puck on a stick and getting the puck out of the zone, because he's really good at that as well with the first pass situation. So huge game changer in the series. But I look at Dallas, Sean, and I just see a team of veteran guys who know how to do it. and, you know, maybe still feeling it a little bit snake bit from last year, right? When they were in this spot and they got to the conference final and then they lost the first three games to Vegas and they fought back to get it to six. They weren't in a grind against Vegas. They couldn't grind with Vegas until Vegas took their foot off the pedal a little bit. And then once Vegas put it back on, it was over in game six. They remember that. And they've also, when you go without a power play goal, and I could say the same thing for Edmonton too, you gotta have faith and belief that you're going to get through one eventually here, and the percentages tell you that, right? Edmonton's probably thinking the same thing, though.
Look, I think one of the real series changers was getting Roope Hintz back in the previous game. It was like getting two players back. It woke Robertson up. He had a hat trick. He hadn't scored, I think, in eight games before that. So he's a huge addition. And then, look, special teams are crazy once you get this far. Somebody asked me about it yesterday on the radio, and it struck me. You know, during the season, you go in, right? You go into Edmonton if you're Dallas, and you're like, here's 10 minutes on their power play. Here's 10 minutes on their PK. Figure it out, boys. Now you're 20-something games. You're 20 games into the playoffs. You have all of that film, and you have a guy. His only job is to do that film.
Right.
On that team. So special teams a lot of times get nullified. Like the Rangers power play is really good. It's done nothing. And the Panthers did nothing until Vesey got knocked out of the series, and they've kind of exploited that a little bit. But I don't think, and I've never thought in all my time covering the playoffs, when people are always like, oh, they're really dangerous on the power play. Big deal. One, you're going to face the best penalty-killing teams with all the video information they can get. And two, you're not going to get penalties. Like, the Rangers are really upset about the penalty discrepancy in their series, or their fans are, at least. I don't know how the Rangers are about it, but you can't get penalties when you don't have the puck.
Right.
So there's going to be a discrepancy. If one team holds the puck for 75% of the time, they're going to have three penalties to every one you have. That's just logic.
That's logic. That I don't think the Rangers are upset about that at all. I think they understand that they got to have the puck. All right, well, listen, that's the stuff in the playoffs right now. 2-2 series, both of them, as we talk right now.
Which, by the way, is fantastic.
It's awesome. It's great. Like, I hope they both go seven. I really do. Like, that would be phenomenal.
We're running out of games, Dan. I want everything to go seven.
Right. Yeah. So let's go seven, both of them. There's been news off the ice, too. And it was – I don't remember the day because, like you, the days kind of – they just run at this point. Not 100% sure what day is what at this point. I keep remembering it's Thursday. I haven't gotten that wrong yet on this podcast, so that's good. But Sheldon Keefe introduced as the New Jersey Devils coach. Dan Bylsma hired by the Seattle Kraken. Promoted, if you will, by the Seattle Kraken. It's been, you know, is their coach in Coachella Valley, and he's back in the NHL, or will be back in the NHL next season. Don Waddell leaves Carolina and goes to Columbus to take on the president and GM role, and John Davidson moves into more of a senior advisor and, you know, governor type role for them. But we can start with any one of these, but I wanted to start with Sheldon Keefe. You know, he leaves Toronto, Sean. Now he's with New Jersey, and I kind of laugh a little bit when people say, well, listen, he's taken over a similar type of team. I don't see that. Like, I don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I mean, the Devils are not built on four guys, right? You got Hughes, you got Hischier and Bratt and Dougie Hamilton, but you got Timo Meier. I mean, you got Luke Hughes coming up. You got Simone Nemec coming up. They didn't make the playoffs this year because they didn't get goaltending. That's why. And Dougie Hamilton got hurt. I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, if you looked at all the openings in the league this year, the Devils to me is the best job for a coach, especially a coach who's coming off of it's a grinder in Toronto. He's going to see some freedom, I think, in New Jersey.
He's going to deal with Mike Morial. That's it. Our colleague Mike Morial.
There's no freedom there. I don't know.
But it's not the Toronto pressure cooker, right? Like, no. Look, there's a pressure to win. There's a pressure to win everywhere. It's slightly different in New Jersey. A lot of guys who played in Toronto have come through New Jersey and really like playing there. I remember when Doug Gilmore played briefly for the Devils. He was like, wow, this is awesome. Like, I can go places. I can do things.
Yeah.
And I feel free, right? So that I think, is part of the appeal. And then he's got a really good team. And I think he's going to be able to show the coach that he is with this team, because he does have more flexibility than really having to ride four guys and you know, have a GM whose hands are really tied because of the money that's involved in those four guys. Fitzgerald, he's a little antsy, right? Yeah. He's got to get something done, right? So he makes a big swing and he gets Keefe. He says he's going to go out and get a goaltender, and I agree with you. That's going to be a huge difference. Dougie Hamilton being healthy is going to be a huge difference. But this is a huge year for the New Jersey Devils. So Keefe is going to get every resource that he needs, player-wise, asset-wise, whatever it might be. And nobody's sitting on their hands in New Jersey this year.
And not only that, they're a year removed from being a team that had 112 points and won a round in the playoffs, okay? And won a round in the playoffs with Akira Schmid as their goaltender. So let's not forget that. He was in Toronto with that team, and it took a long time to win one round in the playoffs. And when they did win one round, then they got smoked in the next one, right? So, and his team in Toronto, we've talked about this. Okay, you're right. I mean, like, I kind of jokingly have said, like, you know, you get a lot of respect in the handshake line, all that stuff, right? They weren't they were a team that it looked like it was growing and was playing. They just didn't have enough. I'm not sure the Devils are going to have enough, but there's a little bit of time there for him. It is, however, a team that did win a playoff round just last season. And this season went in very similar team and just got banged up and had no goaltending. So there's a huge, it's a great opportunity here for Sheldon Keefe and for the New Jersey Devils. So I like the hire, and more than that, I like the spot for Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I do, and you know what? I'm not really joking here. Like, if it doesn't work, who's going to notice? Other than the Toronto media, right? Like, again, we're talking about it. It's not the pressure cooker that he's used to, right? There's obviously internal pressure, and there's going to be pressure from above, but it's not like what he's lived through for the past however many years, what, 6 years now?
Right.
I think it's going to be really freeing. And you look at a lot of these guys, everybody's like, why do they recycle coaches? Because they're better the second time around. He's learned a lot of stuff.
I wonder about Dan Bylsma. I wonder that about him. But I don't love the opportunity for Dan Bylsma. And that's the difference, right? So he did what he had to do. He went after a run in Buffalo that didn't end the way he wanted to. He went and became an assistant coach in Detroit. That didn't go that well either under Jeff Blashill. And so he said, I need to be a head coach again. I need to go to the American Hockey League to do it. And he did, and he's had success in the American Hockey League, and he continues to have success in the American Hockey League as he's still coaching in the Calder Cup playoffs, right? But this, now he's back in the NHL, and I think he's earned his way back in the NHL. So I have no problem with that, but I don't know if the opportunity with the roster in Seattle, unless there's some serious additions, is going to be enough for Dan Bylsma. Because you look at it and it's sort of vanilla, the roster. Now, can Ron Francis make some splashes in free agency and in trades? Well, you hope so, because if not, I don't know how much better the Seattle Kraken are going to be under Dan Bylsma, who, like I said, has earned his way back into the NHL, than they were under Dave Hakstol, Sean. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but I just look at it and I say, okay, like, they kind of played to their level, I think. I think they played way above their level last season. I kind of think they played to their level this season.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be a different team, and I think it's going to have a different tenor under Dan Bylsma. I think he's a different coach, right? And I don't know how many coaches. This is why I'm really happy for Dan Bylsma. I don't know how many coaches that won a Stanley Cup and coached in the Olympics would say, I'll go take a job in the AHL with a split agreement not even for one team. He's got to juggle two teams' prospects. It's one of the ugliest jobs in all of hockey because you can't make anybody happy, right? And he did it, and he rode the buses and did all those things that you have to do to prove that he was capable of coaching. He's in the Final Four for the second time in 2 years. They went to the finals last year, lost to Hershey. Both teams are in it again. There could be a rematch. I was really impressed, Dan, that you knew he was still coaching.
I pay attention.
In the Calder Cup. It's really kind of beneath you. But I just think his players respect that, right? Hockey players respect hard work. And Dan's worked really hard. You know, things came easy for him when he joined the NHL. He won the cup his first year, right? And he was a media star and all these things, and then it went bad. He coached in the Olympics, and things didn't go well there for the United States. And, you know, it was kind of a downward spiral, but he never gave up, and he kept fighting, and now he's back. And I think guys, you know, will see that he's changed somewhat and respect his journey and be willing to work with him and for him.
They got to score for him. They got to score for him. They like, yes, they'll do all that. They have to score. They have to put the puck in the net. They need a guy who's a game breaker. This is on Ron Francis. They need a guy who's a game breaker. They need two guys who are game breakers. They're not going anywhere until they get them. Okay? So that's great. Dan Bosma, happy for him. Glad he's back in it. He needs game breakers to do it. That's on Ron Francis now to get him, because you're not winning without. Look at the teams that are still playing. They all have game breakers. Every single one of them have multiple game breakers. Look at the teams in the last round. They all have game breakers. The ones that lost, all of them, game breakers. So that's what the Seattle Kraken need. Last one. Don Waddell leaves the Carolina Hurricanes, where he had a lot of success, to go to the Columbus Blue Jackets, where success has been very hard to come by. I think it's a good opportunity for Waddell, and he clearly wanted a change out of there. I like the makeup of well, I love Columbus as a city. I think they got a lot of talent there, and I think Waddell can recreate a little bit of the success he had in Carolina. But my bigger question is, what does this leave the Hurricanes? Eric Tulsky's their interim general manager right now. He was the assistant GM. He's the analytics guy, and has done very well. There in Carolina. But Don Waddell was involved in so many things. He was not just the general manager. He was the president. He was involved in the business operations there too. He took the job in business operations. He was involved in the work around the arena that they're going to start doing phases of renovations at the arena. He was involved in that. He was involved in so much. Who's taking that job on? It looks like the job of two people. It is the job of two people. He was doing that job there, and it doesn't seem as though Tom Dundon, the owner in Carolina, is going to want to hire two people to replace one. So who takes that role?
I think you're wrong. I think even Tom understands that it's a two-person job, and you know he'll be willing
to
do that. Well, so do I, because I like when you're wrong. But I do. I think Don Waddell is a singular case. He's an outlier in his ability to kind of bring multiple things to the table. And in his personality, he doesn't really get flustered, right? And I thought him and Tom had a really good working relationship. You know, he said in his press conference, we didn't always agree, but we always talked and we came to some sort of a consensus. And, you know, I think that's important in any kind of relationship like that. So, you know, I think Tom Dundon's going to look at it and say, maybe I need another guy. I don't know if Eric stays the guy. I think that might be a good choice for part of that job, but especially if they go that way, then they know they need somebody else. And whoever takes that job, oh my God, they better get their notebook out really quick, because they got a lot of work to do between now and July 1st.
Yeah, they got a lot of free agents, there's a lot of turnover potential there in Carolina. Now, the good news with the Carolina Hurricanes is the fact that guys like playing there. They love playing for Rod. They love playing for Rod Brind'Amour. They like living there. But you're talking about, you know, a lot of UFAs. I mean, yes, obviously Gensel, but Martinook's been there for a long time. Teravainen's been there for a long time. Nason, he's also a UFA. Brady Shea and Brett Pesce. And listen, Brady Shea and Brett Pesce, if they leave, They're going to be two of the guys scooped up on July 1st in free agency that we don't talk a ton about on free agency day that are going to be making huge differences on their team. We'll talk more about Jake Guentzel, and he'll make a huge difference if he leaves too. But Pesce and Shea are huge factors, have been huge factors on that Carolina team. And I think the league knows it, that we should be on. Let's just say this: on July 1st, we should be talking more about them if they get there.
They're each more important to the Carolina Hurricanes than Brent Burns.
I 100% agree with that. 100. They do more. They just do more, and they're younger. They got better legs. They do more. There's a lot of work to do. There is a lot of work to do there. So, and look, Donnie Waddell probably knew that as well, right? So he gets out of that, and he goes to Columbus, where there is a, you know, obviously a lot of work to be done there too. The thing with the Blue Jackets, though, Sean, I think the talent is there. I mean, yes, you have Gaudreau and Jenner, okay, and you know, Fantilli, you know, but, you know, you go down the list there. You got Werenski, Severson's got a long deal, but I like Damon Severson. He's a good player. The talent is there. Kent Johnson, Line A, is he going to be a player for them or not? We'll see. But they just need some changes. They need a freshened up look, which they're going to get. And they need some luck. Let's be honest. This team has been really bad luck.
Yeah, they need some luck in it. But I also think that they needed a new idea, right?
Yeah.
For a long time, the front office of Columbus has kind of been regenerating himself, right? It's all been Columbus guys that they've kind of brought in. And that's not Don, right? And he's worked with teams that have had to make that climb. He knows what it takes, right? Atlanta, Carolina, you know, was in a precarious place when he took over. He understands the journey that Columbus is going to have to go through, and he'll make some tough decisions to make that happen. And I think he'll find some players that maybe you're like, I don't know about that. And then they play and you're like, wow. Because that's what the Hurricanes are, right? A lot of the Hurricanes are misfit toys. That have come and found a home in Carolina and are better there than they've been anyplace else. And that's the decision a lot of those free agents are going to have to make, right? There's going to be money out there, and you have to think about your long-term future and your family's long-term future. But for a lot of those players, they'll never fit as well as they do in Carolina.
I agree. I think Donnie Waddell is going to be the GM there in Columbus for about 2 years and grooming Rick Nash, and then Rick Nash takes over as the GM. And Waddell just, you know, hangs in as the president of hockey operations. That's how, and it seems to be what Rick Nash is doing. It seems like he's being groomed for being a GM, GM with Team Canada at the Worlds, right? I mean, seems like that's been the path that he's on.
He didn't do so good there, did he?
Well, listen, he's still being groomed on that path. Anyway, listen, we got to get to the Garden, Sean, because we got Game 5 at Madison Square Garden tonight, Thursday night. I got it right again, the date. I got it right again. Game 5, Dallas and Edmonton. All right, they're both 2-2, Sean. So let's go. Who wins each series?
Next week we're going to Florida and Dallas.
Florida and Dallas. Okay. Listen, since they're 2-2, is that what you had at the start?
Yes.
Okay, since I had Rangers-Dallas at the start, I got to stick with it. 2-2, both of them there. So I say we're at the Rangers for Game 1 at Madison Square Garden of the Stanley Cup Final. June 8th, by the way, will be Game 1. You say Florida, in which case I believe it will be Dallas hosting Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. Who knows? It could be Florida-Edmonton. We don't know. 2-2, both series. A lot of fun left in these Stanley Cup playoffs. Enjoy the hockey.